96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. The presidential election is over, but the fight over our national laws is ramping up. Constitutional challenges, real and perceived, are making headlines nearly every day. Now, one of those critical issues involved the 14th Amendment. It's 150 years old this year, but it's just as applicable to your rights now as it was when it was passed in 1866. Well, why are we talking about this? Well, joining me to talk about it are Elizabeth Wydra, president of the Constitutional Accountability Center, and Michael Gerhardt, University of North Carolina constitutional law professor. Give us a call. You'll find this conversation quite interesting. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Comment on my Facebook page at facebook.com/HaroldFisherWHUR. Follow us on Twitter at DailyDrumWHUR or me at HFisherWHUR. Okay, Elizabeth, Michael, thank you both for joining me. I appreciate it.
Great to be with you.
Michael, let me start with you. Kind of set the stage for me. 1866, 14th Amendment. What's going on in America?
Well, I would say that there's a lot going on in America. It's just coming out of a horrific civil war. And at the same time, the Congress is beginning to try and figure out ways not just for healing the country, but for putting together what's going to be called Reconstruction. And one of the first parts of that is the 13th Amendment, which is going to explicitly forbid slavery, involuntary servitude. And then there's going to be some questions raised about the 13th Amendment and whether or not it authorizes certain civil rights laws that Congress is trying to enact at the time, and that debate is going to lead to the drafting and ultimately to the ratification of the 14th Amendment, which is perhaps the single most important amendment we have in the Constitution that guarantees individual rights.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me, Elizabeth, a little bit more about the 14th Amendment, particularly as it applies today. What does it say? What's in it?
So importantly, the 14th Amendment in its first section, it does, I think, three really important things for our conversation tonight. First, it sets the rule of equal citizenship and citizenship at birth. That's important because, first and foremost, it repudiated the horrible Dred Scott decision that the Supreme Court handed down before the Civil War, which said that African Americans did not have any rights that white Americans were bound to respect, mm-hmm. and that they were not true American citizens. So, importantly, the 14th Amendment says, absolutely not. All people born on U.S. soil are citizens, people of any color, any creed, and you're citizens at birth and you're equal citizens. And that's important today, which I'm sure we'll talk about, because mm-hmm. as people probably have heard, there are some, including Trump himself, who have said that perhaps that rule should not apply to children born in the U.S. whose parents are undocumented. But there are two other really important things. First, the 14th Amendment says that every person should get due process of law. We generally understand that to include the rights that were protected in the Bill of Rights in 1789. So freedom of speech, freedom of religion, protections against unreasonable searches and seizures. A lot of people don't know that at the founding, when those were put into the Bill of Rights, they didn't actually apply to the states. They only bound the federal government. So you could have protection from the federal government on that score, but the states were free if they wanted to violate those rights until the 14th Amendment. And then finally, the 14th Amendment says that any person deserves the equal protection of the law. So you deserve to have your fundamental rights protected, and you deserve to have them given to you on an equal basis. And the other thing that's important about the Equal Protection Clause is that it says it applies to any person. So this is a very broad language that was chosen by the drafters of the 14th Amendment. It includes people of all colors. It includes immigrants and citizens. It includes men and women. It includes gay or straight. Any person deserves equal protection of the law in the United States. So those are, I think, are the most important parts of the 14th Amendment. And obviously, when you talk about equality, liberty, citizenship, that raises a whole host of issues that are present in today's debate.
And it's interesting because, you know, Michael, for example, when we, you know, talk about how, you know, how the 14th Amendment was, of course, you know, first passed by Congress and, you know, ratified some 2 years later, this was still a battle that was being fought north and south. This just wasn't smooth sailing in Congress, correct?
That is correct. It's not smooth sailing in lots of places. Congress actually may have been one of the few places where it was a little smoother than some others, and that's partly because Republicans, by and large, controlled it. But even once the 14th Amendment goes into effect, there's going to be a tremendous amount of debate about at least a couple things. One is going to be, of course, about what it means. That debate, in many respects, is still going on. As we just pointed out, lots of grand phrases and important guarantees in the 14th Amendment that are going to have to be worked out over time, and almost none of which gets worked out in the 19th century. The other thing that's going on, as you point out, is that North and South, of course, have been hugely divided at that point in history, and there's going to be an important responsibility that really rests on Congress, to come back to that, to try and implement, to try and craft and implement what we've called Reconstruction. Reconstruction is going to consist of a lot of different things, the most important of which will be civil rights laws. And ultimately, what we're going to find throughout the country is that the South hasn't really stopped fighting the Civil War. The South, throughout much of the late 19th century, even into the 20th century, is going to try and find ways to either impede the 14th Amendment, stop its implementation across the South, and that becomes a big problem. And then, frankly, the North doesn't help either. There are real major problems that happen both in the White House and in the North with regard to not enforcing the 14th, not enforcing Reconstruction. Ultimately, it's actually with the Reconstruction legislation that's enacted in the aftermath of the Civil War is going to actually end up kind of lapsing under Presidents Ulysses Grant and Rutherford B. Hayes, and that's going to set the stage for many of the civil rights problems in the 20th century. So we, you know, many of the problems we're facing today have really sort of grown out of the discord from they're really parts of our history.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about the 14th Amendment then and now and why you should be paying attention to it now more than ever. Let me go to the phone lines. Glenn calling from Waldorf. Glenn, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, thanks for taking my call, and good evening to your guests. Thank you very much. What I would just like to say is that, you know, The indigenous people that were already here when the Europeans came over and started changing some things, they fall under a different category than the 14th Amendment. They are state citizens. Am I correct? And the 14th Amendment only gives you a certain amount of rights, but the state citizens have a different set of rules. Can you expound on that?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, so thank you so much for your call. So there was debate around that on the birthright citizenship clause, because one of the exceptions to birthright citizenship is if you are not subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. And there was some debate about whether or not tribal land was truly under the jurisdiction of the United States or not. But that was resolved in favor of determining that Native Americans were birthright citizens, just like other people born in the United States. But, you know, I think it does raise a lot of the issues that Professor Gerhardt was talking about, issues that we were talking about in the 1860s are still very much issues today, talking about, you know, the rights of Native Americans to equal protection of the laws. That includes, I would say, the right to have clean water as a citizen of these United States, to have on an equal citizenship basis the ability to access clean air, clean water as anyone else. And, you know, again, as Professor Gerhardt said, a lot of the initial promise of the 14th Amendment and the program of Reconstruction after the Civil War We had, you know, we saw a burgeoning of black political power. Some of the first African-American congressmen, the hero Robert Smalls from South Carolina, who, you know, was a Confederate war, who literally was a war hero and freed himself by taking a Confederate warship into Union territory and was a hero and one of the first African-American congressmen out of South Carolina. You know, we saw this initial economic prosperity, political power building that was thwarted. And then we saw the introduction of Jim Crow laws in the South that really took back that initial promise of the 14th Amendment, that promise of equality. And it took, you know, the hard work of generations culminating in the civil rights laws in the 1960s and that we're still struggling to have implemented today to get back that voting power, to get back the some of the beginnings of being able to have economic equality. But obviously, there's much more work to do. But a lot of these issues of voting, civil rights, education, housing, financial equality that were issues at the time of Reconstruction, still very much issues today.
Thank you so much, Glenn. I want to talk a little bit more about this, too. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the 14th Amendment, the sweeping and very powerful 14th Amendment 150 years ago this year, and how it is applicable even today. Elizabeth, there's an event that that is coming up this Thursday. Talk to me about that if you can.
Yes, it's a really exciting event this Thursday evening at the National Archives here in Washington, D.C. It's a part of the Second Founding Project celebrating the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, their 150th anniversary. That's put on jointly by my organization, the Constitutional Accountability Center, and the absolutely wonderful National Constitution Center in Philadelphia. We'll be talking about the 14th Amendment and the many ways in which it protects equality and liberty. We're going to have Senator Chris Coons, Fourth Circuit Judge Wynn, as well as advocates who today still use the 14th Amendment to provide for racial equality, gender equality, sexual orientation equality, economic liberty. So people who are actively litigating the 14th Amendment, and it's free to the public. I encourage everyone to come out 7 p.m. this Thursday at the National Archives in Washington, D.C.
And for more information online, where can they find out about that?
You can find a slide for the wonderful event at our homepage at CAC. It's www.theusconstitution.org.
theusconstitution.org. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I want to bring this a kind of full circle for a bit. This morning, President-elect Donald Trump sent out a tweet about the burning of the American flag and says that it should be punishable by either in some jail time or even loss of citizenship. What is wrong with that statement from a constitutional point of view, not a political point of view, but from constitutionality? Go ahead, Professor, if you will.
Well, there's a lot wrong with it, of course. To begin with, the Supreme Court has made it very, very clear, not just once, but actually twice, that burning the American flag as a form of political expression is actually protected by the First Amendment of the Constitution. And so that holding is actually more than 20 years old. And it's actually well settled in American constitutional law. And I should hasten to add that one of the justices that President-elect Trump so admires, the late Antonin Scalia, actually was in the majority in those cases, saying unequivocally that yes, this might not be something I personally would applaud or approve of or anything else, but it is something absolutely protected by the First Amendment of the Constitution. So as a matter of political expression, that's settled and it's protected. And then, of course, another major problem has to do with the possible loss of citizenship over something like this. Not just the Constitution, the Supreme Court has made very, very clear that people don't lose their citizenship over things like that. They certainly are never going to lose their citizenship over a matter of political expression. And so that's that is unfortunately not just a sort of intemperate statement, but it's just completely contrary to our constitutional tradition.
Real quick, I'm going to ask this question and we can talk about it on the other side because I've got to take a break. What would it take, if at all, to overturn that 1989 decision? I want to talk about that. I want to talk a little bit more about the 14th Amendment, how it is applicable today, including not only burning flags, burning crosses, and equal protection under the law. And also, what is economic equality? I want to talk about all of these things. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More of this conversation in just a few seconds. Stay with us.